Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman alongside Mark Z.
John, it's been a great experience as always working with you.
As always. And our wonderful hosts for today, Tarlo Breed, Hart & Rogers. And because we are at a law firm, our topics for today are largely centered on the legal profession. And our next guest in the studio is Ron Barrier. Ron is from Burns & Levinson. Welcome, Ron.
Hello.
Welcome, Ron.
A pleasure to have you on Radio Entrepreneurs. Some of your colleagues have been on before, and this is your first foray, so we'll try and make it pleasant.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me.
You want to tell us a little bit about the firm in general? And I know we've heard a lot about it, but then we can talk about specifically what it is that you do.
Sure. Burns & Levinson is a mid to large size firm. We specialize in just about every area of the law. I particularly practice in the areas of domestic relations and probate litigation, which means I'm a trial lawyer. I spend a lot of time in the probate and family court, and I've been doing that for my entire career. And I've been with Burns & Levinson my entire career. I'm kind of a dinosaur in that regard. I came to Burns & Levinson as a summer associate back in 2000,
wow.
And I've been with them ever since. And now I'm a partner, and I feel very strongly that we have the best group of private client lawyers in the entire state.
Excellent.
Congratulations, excellent. Too. You're bucking a trend among people who graduate and move from place to place to place.
It's true.
You and I are the same. I'm in the same place for 30 years.
Well, it's as an employment.
I came before the furniture.
As an employment person, it's just nice to know that you're an example of a different trend, but somebody who's really developed and grown, and now you're a key partner in that space in a very continually blossoming space. So.
Yes.
So an interesting topic that you want to discuss is the marital home and what happens in the case of divorce. And I imagine it's not as straightforward as one would hope a lot. And there are probably various aspects to making sure that it goes well. And it's typically, in most families, one of the most significant assets.
Now, John, you're absolutely right. It's one of the most common stressors on people when they come into my office is, what's going to happen in my house? Especially if they have children. It's the first thing that they come and they ask about because they're concerned that it's going to be so disruptive to their family if indeed they're going to get a divorce beyond the obvious disruptions that come along with it. So what people need to understand is that to the courts, the marital home is just another asset, and all of the assets in the marital pot are subject to Massachusetts General Law 208, Section 34. And what that statute tells us is that all assets, how and ever and whenever acquired, are subject to division. So for people, the marital home is, it's emotion, it's history, it's where they raise
right.
their kids and where they're hanging their family photos. But unfortunately to the courts, it's sticks and bricks that can be converted to a pool of cash. So my job as a lawyer is to help people understand that in the court's eyes, they're not seeing it the same way they are.
So what's interesting, just to piggyback on what you said about, although it's emotion and the court's eyes, there's a philosophy out there that maybe it's a rumor or something that is put out there that if you're getting divorced, it's important who stays in the marital home in order to have a leg up in getting the marital home. Is that still true?
So, Mark, that's a good question. When I first started practicing, there was very much the adage, if you leave, you lose, about the use and occupancy of the marital home. Over the years, that's changed. And I think it's changed not just because of market forces, but changes in the family dynamic, and not only in Massachusetts, but in the country as a whole. What I mean by that is, first of all, homes aren't necessarily the best investment anymore.
Right.
What they used to be were, especially when interest rates were low and lending was high, they used to be seen as an asset that was only going to appreciate in value. But unfortunately, recent market fluctuations have taught us that that is not the case. And also, I think the changing dynamics of the family have impacted that as well. Fathers oftentimes are coming to me asking for more time with their kids. They oftentimes have more flexible work schedules than they used to when they were working the traditional, 8 to 4 or 9 to 5. And moms tend to work more than they did previously, and also with more flexible work schedules.
Right.
So I think those two things have kind of eroded the notion of if you leave, you lose. Now people are realizing that ultimately, maintaining a marital home post-divorce can be kind of an albatross.
Right.
It's not just a pool of cash. It's a mortgage, and it's a lawn to mow.
It's a money pit.
It's a money pit. It's
right.
Exactly right. Yeah, it's like Shelley Long and Tom Hanks taught us.
Get closer.
So in terms of, the as you said, the court looks at it from a very non-emotional perspective, sticks and bricks. When you're working with your clients, are you trying to disengage them from the emotion of the home? And I know that's probably a very difficult thing to do.
No, it's very hard, John. Are you trying to make them
practical in terms of how to deal with it?
And it's a good question. And frankly, it's something that every lawyer, every good lawyer struggles with, because what we have to do is we have to be realistic with our clients, but also be sensitive to their needs. So what I do is I tend to sit my clients down and have a really difficult conversation early, and I try to have it as often as I can to manage their expectations and also to make sure that they understand the complexities of the issue at play. What they don't want to do is just hold on to it, you know, with white-knuckled fists in order to keep the asset against all odds if it's not financially what's in their best interest long-term, or if it's not what's in the best interest of their kids.
Right.
So I really try to explain the process to them early, explain to them what fair market value means, how fair market value is determined, what debt is. And you'd be surprised at how few people actually understand what debt is. They say, well, yeah, we have a mortgage, but we also have a second mortgage, and we also have an equity line, and also there was a tax issue. But, you know, those things really aren't considered.
Well, do they understand the concept of underwater? No, and it's true, because many people today leverage themselves, you know, tremendously.
Yeah, and frankly, it's one of the things that I tend to pride myself on with managing my clients, is explaining to them and educating them on the process to make them a little bit more financially literate, especially if I can, before the divorce process really gets going, so that they go into the process with eyes wide open and realistic expectations.
Well, just to follow that up, the other interesting aspect is when you have, especially with interest rates, or as John said, underwater and everything, you may have a home that's in a certain district. So, for example, in houses are very, very expensive. So, for example, somebody wants to be in Newton or Weston, and that's where the house is, and they have a very good school system. If you sell that house, the parents may not be able to afford to then keep their kids in that district. On the other hand, as you say, you've got to figure something out, because you may need the cash from that house.
Yep.
And just to add one more thing, and I know that it's sort of like it's still evolving, but I know there's some families that for an initial period, they keep the home, and each comes in at a certain time to
home sharing,
right? In terms of that
nesting,
in order to nesting
is what we call
okay
it.
Nesting in order to keep the kids
as stable as possible and yeah. keep everything as quote unquote normal as possible.
Right.
Well, you know, what you're touching upon are a number of factors that come into play, and that's one of the things that's frankly most interesting for divorce practitioners, is divorce law is very fact-specific law. I mean, an entire case can hinge upon one little factual change in the scenario. So nesting, while it's generally disfavored among practitioners and the courts, frankly, can work, especially in the short term on a temporary order basis when a divorce is pending. It rarely works post-divorce. And what nesting is most effective for are situations where there isn't necessarily enough cash flow in the family to do a child support and alimony scenario on a temporary basis and maintain two separate properties.
Right.
It's often useful, too, when the kids are of a certain age where it would be very disruptive for them to be going between two houses. So what we will do is we will structure a scenario where the higher-earning spouse pays the majority of the living expenses associated with that property in lieu of paying formal support. And in exchange, everyone will be in the house, and there'll be certain defined ground rules. Now, obviously, that's fraught with a lot of problems
right.
when it's a high acrimony situation to begin with. So
right.
I put my emphasis on ground rules. People
right.
need to be very respectful of one another's processes, one another's schedules. And people also need to behave in a manner that's really mature and in furtherance of the best interests of their kids. Because in a nesting scenario, it really does require a lot of emotional maturity on the part of both parents.
I could see why attorneys typically aren't in favor of it.
Yeah, I know, because, you know, when people come into a divorce, they're already in an acrimonious situation. Even if they come just to talk to me about the process, they're already having concerns about the way that the relationship is going. And it's really fraught with pitfalls to negotiate terms of people remaining in a property when they're already upset at each other. But it can be done, and it does require a lot of emotional maturity on the part of the participants.
So have things changed over the course of the last decade or two as far as the, you know, marital home is concerned? Have there been changes in the law in terms of how it's viewed and how it's looked at? Does a court force the sale of the asset? How does that all come about?
I wouldn't say that the law has changed. I will say that what has changed really are those market forces I was alluding to earlier, mm-hmm. and also the shifting family dynamics. But in terms of the market forces, again, you know, when I first started practicing, it was just a foregone conclusion that mom was more likely to stay in the house
right.
with the kids. Dad would get another place to live, and then dad would be paying support. It was very, very common for that to happen. It's less so now because oftentimes people overbought. They overleveraged, and they're in a property that they can barely afford. And also, frankly, life is just a lot more expensive now. Kids are a
right.
lot more expensive now. And
right.
also, frankly, kids are a lot more entitled now. And a 16-year-old young man or woman is not going to want to leave the house that they've been in for 15, 16 years because mom and dad aren't getting along.
Right.
Because they're thinking, hey, mom and dad, you haven't been getting along for a long time. I still need to pass trigonometry and make it to lacrosse practice.
Right. Right, they don't want that disruption. They're especially now they're another stage with their friends and just in terms of their life. But as just to piggyback what Jonathan said, it's also because women, mom may now have a bigger career.
Yeah.
You know, has more opportunities than even 10 years ago than moms did, and dads. You know, ironically, in my business, I'm finding dads are staying home or dads have to have a flexible schedule because mom is the dominant economic force.
Yeah, and absolutely, that's been a major shift. Even during the pendency of my career, you know, again, when I started in 2000, it was very, very almost expected that dad would move out of the house. Dad, who was working more than mom, would be paying traditional amount of support, and then dad would be expecting to get every other weekend and maybe one dinner visit during the week.
Right.
Now, at the time, the language was, you know, mom had primary physical custody. Well, over the years, that term physical custody is kind of eroded. And now what people tend to do is focus on enjoying a parenting plan where both parties are having ample access to the kids and sometimes even equal access to the kids
right.
in order to maintain as much of a family positive family relationships on both sides of the V as possible. But, you know, frankly, that's contingent upon dad having the flexibility in his job force to be able to do that, and mom being able to go out and earn at the level commensurate with making that a realistic scenario.
Right.
Yep. Has that been a shift for the courts? Because it seems to me that not only the socioeconomic economic factors at play, but at least from the outsider's perspective, it always seemed that there was this bias towards, you know, the custody with the mother, the home with the mother, and maybe it had to do with earnings, but it seemed to me to be more of a gender-driven thing.
Kids
are best with mom.
You know,
nurturing.
I may be biased, but I find that the Massachusetts Probate and Family Court judges are uniformly some of the best judges sitting anywhere. And I haven't observed a gender bias, but what I have observed very much is a bias against language. And I know a few years ago I fell into this habit with one particular judge, and it was just like a mental block. I kept saying the word visitation, and she very politely corrected me about three times on the record and said parenting plan. And what she was saying is, you know, counsel, Ron, the way you're thinking about this is like a dinosaur. Don't think about
right.
it that way. It's about parenting plan. And it's about making sure that both mom and dad have as much time with their kids as they can. And that has been a positive trend, I think, in the probate and family court over the years.
What was also interesting, besides the economics that John was saying and developing a parenting plan, spouses that work and just sadly, or just the way the market is, John and I have contemporaries that are divorced. And what's interesting is a lot of the mothers, they want the fathers involved
yeah.
for a number of reasons. One, it's good for the kids. Two, they also have their own career. They need their time for their career, and they need their space. So they actually, it's a good thing, as opposed to holding over their head, you know, we didn't get the child support or I didn't get the alimony. I want you in because then I can do my job, focus on my career, and also have a break because it's very consuming.
Yeah,
correct?
I think that's an absolutely a strong point. I mean, one of the things that, you know, there are very few positives you can take from a divorce process, but one of the positives that people find is that it's nice to have time with your kids that's just your time.
Right.
And it's nice to have time to yourself that's just your time.
Right.
you know, it used to be in the olden days that, you know, folks were fighting about, you're not doing enough, I'm doing everything. Well, now people are saying, please do
Let
more.
Me in.
Right.
Do more
right.
so that I can
right.
have some time to myself. I can go on vacation. I can go out with my girlfriends or with my guy friends.
Right.
And they know that when they have their kids, it can be all about their kids.
Right.
They can just dedicate their time to that kids. And that's one of the few positive emotional outcomes that can come from a divorce process.
Excellent.
Wonderful segment, Ron. You've given us some great insights to think about. I'm sure you can come back and talk a whole lot more about the implications for business and what happens in that case, and you know, where there's a divorce and that business other than a home is a primary asset. And so maybe we'll have another segment on something along those lines. But, you know, clearly a very emotionally charged arena that you operate in, and it sounds like you're doing great work in terms of trying to counsel your clients to make it practical as well, because they've got to move on.
Yeah.
You know, and it's probably in the best interest of the family when, you know, the one good thing that comes out of it is probably a lot less tension in the house at the end of the process. So we really appreciate you coming on. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
The best way for them to reach me is they can look me up on the internet. I'm out there, Ronald Barrier at Burns & Levinson, and my email address is rbarrier@burnslev.com, and that's RBARRIERE at burnslev.com.
And your phone number?
My phone number is 617-345-3000.
Excellent.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Ron, it's been a pleasure. And remind our listeners to tune into our social media channels and our YouTube channel and watch the video of Ron and other guests, and to stay tuned for another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.